Hey, good evening, everybody, and welcome to our VBC, The Scuttlebutt. I almost said happy hour. This used to be called the happy hour. It's now called The Scuttlebutt. And we get together every Monday and have conversations about all things military, all things related to the veterans community. And tonight we're talking about military records research, how to do it, where to do it, what to look for, with military records researcher, a true expert, and a wonderful person, Beth Ruschel. Hello, Beth. How are you?
Hi, everybody. I'm good.
We're going to get into the conversation. We conceived it. Beth and I are thinking about this as kind of military records research 101 for people who want to get started. But you know, Beth immediately goes into the detail. So I think we'll be covering a lot of ground, and we want to make sure that we have time for everybody's questions and comments. And I know that about 15 or 20 of you have sent Beth queries in advance of this program. I also know about 15 or 20 of you have purchased raffle tickets so that Beth, you can be included, your subjects can be included in Beth's next research trip to the National Personnel Records Center in St. Louis. So we're going to do that. We're going to spin the wheel of names. We're going to entertain your questions. And we're going to start with Beth presenting just kind of how to get started, the how-to, where to go, what to look for first. We got a hand raised already. Al Smith, here we go. Hello, Al.
Okay. Before Beth even starts with the presentation, I'm going to give her a testimonial, because I sent in, when you put out the invitation that said, if you're looking for a family member, whatever, and I emailed Beth and I said, you know, there was a guy who was in Fort Lewis for 2 months, and I, two second lieutenants before we went to Vietnam, became very friendly with him. He went off to the 25th Infantry Division. I went off to the 1st Infantry Division. And I always wondered whatever happened to him. Hopefully he came home. So all I did was give Beth his name and the 25th Infantry Division. And a couple of days later, I get this email from Beth saying, I think I have your guy. And she did. And she had a picture of him. She had his wedding invitation and other information. So I was very impressed.
That's Beth. I mean,
thank you, Al.
Yeah, Beth, you are. And I will, you know, I'll say this, that I've been working in the veterans community now for 16 years. And so because I do so, people think that I know answers to questions like, how do I get a veteran's ID? How do I get veterans benefits? Where do I get my military beret repaired? I got that one once. And I don't know the answer to any of these. And the question I get most of all is, how do I research a veteran in my family? And, you know, I know the very, very basics, but not much more than that. And that's why I'm so grateful for people like Beth. Beth is absolutely the number one go-to person for most queries that I get, and certainly for anything that has to do with military records research. And what's special about Beth is that she does all this out of her passion for it, her you know, her expertise, she contributes to the veterans community as much as anybody I know, certainly here in Western Pennsylvania. And unlike me, she doesn't, you know, care about the limelight. She doesn't, you know, have to be, you know, in the spotlight. She does it kind of quietly, but I've seen it over the years that Beth has done so much for so many veterans very quietly. But truly, I think the most valuable thing she probably does is this remarkable records research that she's able to do. This is Beth Ruschel. She is with Ruschel Research. You can find out more about Ruschel Research at ruschelresearch.com, and a real expert in military records research. She got her start doing research, I found, through conversations with Beth at age 14. By then, she had already read all of the hardback versions of the Nancy Drew mysteries. And then she decided to do her own sleuthing to find her birth parents. She's adopted, and she was eager to find her birth parents, which she did. And that put her on the path, I think, to really understanding how records work and the kind of digging that you have to do to find the information that you want. And she has been doing military records research now for several years. And I know several people who've been helped by her. Beth, thank you so much for joining us. I'm glad you're willing to join us tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you, Todd.
So the idea is that we could get Beth to maybe give us just an overview how to get started if you have a, say, a parent or a brother or sister or a grandparent that you, a great grandparent, maybe you want to research. How do you start? And we'll just I'll start with that. What, okay, Beth, what are the three main pieces of information you want to have about somebody that you want to research?
To get started,
Yeah, to get started.
obviously their name. And then the other things other than their name, it could be what state they entered the service from is always helpful. Because even if you think the name is unusual, there are probably other people with that name out there. Birth date, service number, those are the main things that I look for. And if somebody just gives me their name and where they enlisted into the military from, I can go from there, really. But usually the name, their place of birth helps. Branch of service is huge. Those are all things right there that are very helpful to start with.
So, hometown where they enlisted, do people, pardon my ignorance here, Beth, people normally enlist from their hometowns? They don't travel elsewhere to enlist, correct?
Well, at least the state, the city and state that they live in when they go into the service are going to be attached to their service records. Like on my grandfather's separation papers, it says, Chicago, Illinois. Wherever they lived when they entered the service are going to that city and state are going to be attached to all of the records that I start digging into.
I should let people know that Beth sent me a really comprehensive how to get started guide in PDF form that I am going to share here on the chat. And either Beth or I could email it to you also if it, upon request. I highly suggest that people just look at the PDF because it'll contain the links and all the details that Beth covers here verbally. I love the fact that you suggest that, one thing that people should do before they even maybe even consult the, official records is talk to family members, talk to people who might know something. Even a little clue might get you, over a hump.
Absolutely. When I was researching my grandpa, my mom knew that he was in the Air Force or Army Air Force then, World War II. I'm pretty sure that my uncle thought that he was a ball turret gunner. He was actually a tail gunner. And my uncle ended up having my grandfather's flight records. So those are the records that have all of the dates, the amount of time they were in flight, his flight records from his service, which was huge. And I was able to piece that together with other things to know, what missions he was on. But if you just ask around, somebody might know something about the person. And even just knowing that he was in the Air Force helped when I was looking for records.
And sometimes it's just a little scrap of information. I did some research on my great uncle, and I just remember everybody saying, all he talked about was New Guinea. He just talked about New Guinea. So I knew he was in New Guinea. You know what I mean? I knew nothing else. But even that little piece of information was helpful. So anything you could find from the family, any scrap, and certainly any documentation, separation papers, stuff like that. But also, I think any kind of verbal information that might you might come across. Right, is valuable.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you don't have anything, if you don't have much to go on, like I said, I mean, the name and even knowing where they lived when they went into the service, that's huge. You can go with just the name, but it's going to take a while because, for instance, what you have up there, Raymond E. Schmidt, there are multiple Raymond E. Schmidts. I found another Raymond E. Schmidt that was also killed in action, just like my great uncle. It just takes longer. If you don't have anything but the name, it can be done, I'm sure, but it's just going to take you longer.
Right. Create a timeline. That sounds intimidating.
Yeah, so with Ray, what I did was, we really had nothing. And when he went into the service, he went in to the 5th Infantry Division. He was in a field artillery battalion. But he was moved around so much during his, 4 years of service that, and he didn't come home. So what we did was we took all of his letters and made a timeline. And this was suggested to me by another researcher to create a timeline. And what that does is that helps with what records you need to look for. That helps with placing them historically at different battles and different times. So say I go to the St. Louis National Archives and I want to look for mourning reports for my Uncle Ray. It's going to really help me when I'm looking for him in a mourning report instead of just aimlessly looking, day to day to day to day through 4 years of reports. So if you have the information or you have letters or you have something that you can create a historical timeline with, if your particular veteran, was transferred around like Ray was, it really helps to create a timeline.
And you can see it starts with April 1941, and he's in the 46th Field Artillery Battalion at Fort Custer. And you can see he moves around. And so you want to be able to, and this is what writers do, historians do also, is simply just create a timeline so that you have things in order. That will really help. All right, here it is. This is probably, if you want one document, this is probably the one to get, or maybe the easiest one to get.
I wouldn't say easiest. It depends. It depends on if someone in your family has it. We had that because my grandmother had that. But my great uncle Gene, I didn't have it. And when I requested it, the state of Illinois, every state is different. Just put it that way. If you're trying to request something from the state, the veterans, from what I learned, most or a lot of times the veterans will file that separation paper with the city or state county that they live in. And I tried to get my great uncles from the state of Illinois and I was turned down right away. So I waited for months to get it from the National Archives and what they produced was a half because it's burned. There are some states like Massachusetts that I was able to get separation papers overnight from, like literally overnight. But if you do have access to the record and report of separation, DD-214, whatever it's called, depending on when the veteran was in service, that's going to help you tremendously when you're looking for anything else. I mean, there's so much information packed on that page right there.
Beth, if somebody doesn't have a DD-214, and before 1950, they were just called records of separation or something like that, right? DD-214 came around like 1950. If somebody doesn't have this, say, in the family or in the home or in an attic or box or whatever, where's the best place to order it to start? Is it the National Archives, archives.gov?
I would do that just because of the length of time it's going to take to get it. So just do that right off the bat. But if you then want to, also, like I was saying, look into the whatever your state's archives are. Look for, Pennsylvania State Archives, Illinois State Archives. Look at your state archives page, see how they work when it comes to military archives. And there should be something, on your state archival page that tells you contact this place or contact and also try your states, try your city, try your county, just because that is such a valuable piece of information. Now you're probably not going to get, you can get a World War II one if you're anybody. But other branches, like if you haven't been out of service for 62 years or more, you can only get that separation or DD-214 at that point, if you're the veteran or next of kin.
Next of kin. Let me, and before we move on here, and I, Brian, I know that you have your hand up. I'm going to go to your next. These, let's say, let's start with Pennsylvania, Allegheny County, where we live. How robust is the Pennsylvania Archives webpage? I mean, is it easy to order a DD-214 from the Pennsylvania Archives, or does it take like a lot of phone calls or mail or what?
I haven't even tried in Pennsylvania. Matter of fact, I was on their website last night. And I'd like a test case to see if we can get them from the state of Pennsylvania. In Illinois, they referred me to a veteran service officer in the county or city where my great uncle lived. And they responded pretty quickly, no, we don't have anything on your uncle,
Okay.
which when I ended up getting his records, I know is not true because it says in his OMPF that a whole bunch of stuff was sent to the VA. So they definitely have his stuff. They just didn't want to share it
Okay. Boy. So it can be tough.
Every
Okay.
state's different.
Brian. Yeah. Hi,
Situation
Brian. How are
varies.
you?
How you doing, Todd? Been a long time since we've seen you.
Yeah, it's good to see you.
Hi, Todd.
Yeah, Irene is here with me.
Hi, Irene. Good to see you. This is Irene and Brian. They've been on our trip to Normandy. They've come to New Orleans with us. They live in Houston, Texas. It's good to see you.
No, it's good to see
Likewise.
you too, and thank you again for all that you do for the veterans around the country. Thank you.
And you have a research question.
Yes, my grandfather was in World War I. I know that he was in the artillery, excuse me, and his records were in St. Louis, and of course, that had a big fire. And I have tried to get some information on him, and I just run up against a wall. Is there any way possible that I can find out how to get his information?
We are that is number that's probably the number one question on our in this talk tonight. When we ask people if you have a research question, let Beth know. A third of them were about the fire. I keep on running into this fire. They say they don't have the records because they were burned. How do I get around that? Is there a workaround? Yeah, we are definitely going to be discussing that tonight.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Hey, Ronald Sheehan. Won't you unmute if you can?
Beth, I want to thank you. I got a couple of papers from you about my two of my uncles.
Oh, yes, hi.
I had some of that information, but it does give me a little bit more information. But what is the And I don't know what they call the National Research Center sent me
National
an
Arms.
information from an uncle that I'm pretty certain he was in the Navy, and they said they have no DD-214 because he did not serve. What's up with that? Like one issue I have with him is I knew him as Uncle Ken, and when we go to visit him in New Jersey, everybody there called him Bill. So it's William Ken or Ken William. And I'm trying to search on both names, but is there a way around that where they say he was not in the Navy?
So the National Archives said that he wasn't in the Navy?
Well, they can't find the
Yeah,
DD-214
they
separation.
didn't find a DD-214, they said, because he never served. And
He never served.
I don't have enough. Only have one or two family members left that I know of that might know anything. I haven't contacted them yet, but that might be a way to go.
So if you, I think I emailed you back last night. If you email me, the little like his name, where he lived, I'll see what I can find. If he was actually in the Navy, there's no way that they don't. I mean, they definitely have his information because the Navy and the Marine Corps are the only ones that the records didn't burn. So if he was in the Navy or Marines, they have his records at the
Where are
National
those
Archives.
records?
They would be in St. Louis at the National Archives. The fire that Todd was talking about in 1973 that destroyed a large percentage of personnel records, the Navy had everything in fireproof boxes. So the Navy and Marine Corps, I think they had like maybe 500 records destroyed, but 250 out of how many were recovered. So they lost like nothing. So if he
Okay.
was in the
I'll...
Navy, they definitely have his information.
All right. Thank you. I will send you some
Yeah,
information.
email me again.
Thank
Appreciate
you, Ron. Hey, I'm going to go to Beth, and then I'm going to go to Beth Feather, and then we're going to get Beth Ruschel back on track with her talk. How are you doing, Beth Feather? Good to see you.
Hey, thanks, Todd. I'm doing well. But since I've done some genealogy, and also because I've worked for a congressman where I had to do congressional research to assist veterans, I know a few key things here. So to answer the question here locally in Allegheny County, when the most common question that I got was, oh my gosh, we can't find that DD-214 or those separation papers. And if the family didn't have them, and if that veteran lived in Allegheny County during World War II or previous, and if they did what they were supposed to, filed those discharge papers with the county when they returned, you will find that in Allegheny County. Guess what department it's in? The real estate department.
Oh my
What?
gosh.
Yeah, really. I mean, I was like, because I had
Seriously.
the privilege of working for Congress at the time, and I had a very, I called the county, and it was very easy to find out, hey, I'm looking for this DD-214. How can you help me? Oh, yeah, we have those. Where are they? In the real estate department. Oh, okay. I wrote that phone number down big time because I never in a million years would have found it. Now, the other thing that I have told other friends who are looking for records of veterans, I'll ask them, where did that veteran live? Where did he go back to after he came home? Go to the county, not state, but the county courthouse. And especially Washington, Fayette, Beaver, Butler, all the surrounding ones, and ask them there. Recently, a friend of mine found one in Washington, PA. She says, oh, yeah, my sister really wants to do this. So I want to ask the question of the group, all you veterans out there, did you come home and file your discharge papers at the county level? There's a reason they do that for you. Because when the family can't find it, guess where it is? It's at the county somewhere.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's my
Thank you for that.
focus.
That's why military records research can be so darn confusing. Dennis Wojcik, good to see you. I'm going to have you hold on a second, a few minutes while we have Beth continue her discussion here of these military records. I'm going to get back. Oh, here it is. Here's the slide. Beth, DD-214 is one thing. The official military personnel L file is quite another. This is kind of the holy grail, would you say, of military records.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people want to be able to access, and that's the big, the fire disaster. The DD-214 would be a part of the OMPF. There's so much information in an OMPF. A lot of people that requested them even 10 years ago and were turned down, they have come up with, they have designed such new technology and methods of cleaning these burned records. The records were burned, but that wasn't the only problem. Then they were affected by mold because of the water that put the fire out. So over the years, new technologies come out. They are cleaning these records up in methods that they used to not be able to. So there is a good chance that your veteran might ha now have a B file, what they call a B file, which is a burn file. And in a B file, it might not, it's obviously not going to be the entire official military personnel record, but you can still get some good information within what's left. I have found that myself with some of my veterans. But yeah, so if you were told X amount of years, 10 or more years ago, that your file, probably even five, they've done so much more in the last, recent years with cleaning these records, it's amazing. But the official military personnel file is going to have all of your everywhere that they moved to. Gosh, I was able to pull a Navy veteran and a Marine Corps veteran this December, I guess it was. And their records were beautiful because they were completely intact. So it shows all the movement orders, shows the different places where they've been, different places where they were in training. My uncle's had a whole bunch of different medical records in it, times that he was and anytime that they're injured or that they've gone to the hospital. And I mean, there's even with a fire, I think I have probably like 70 pages in my uncle's. I had two burn files from him, and I still have 70 pages, even though some of it burned. So, it's amazing what they've been able to do and what you can still get out there. But this is going to help you build your veteran story from beginning to end. Now you're going to still want to look for other records that supplement that. You know, okay, what was going on in Guam at that particular period of time? You know, the dates that they were there. But this is going to give you the ability to really build a picture of their story.
And again, these are records that are available to the public, to anybody, if the veteran has been discharged more than 62 years. If they've
Right.
been discharged within the past 62 years, then only the veteran, him or herself, or the next of kin could order these records.
Right.
These records can be ordered through archives.gov, and we could share the link here in the Zoom room, the exact link that you use to order the OMPF records, archives.com, or you could do it by mail. If you do it by mail, I understand, and you've pointed this out, I didn't know this, that you have to request it from the St. Louis National Archives, not the National Personnel Records Center, which is also in St. Louis. A little
It
confused.
is.
Correct.
And I did that incorrectly one time, and it took even longer. I mean, it takes, if you, so
Hey,
when you
Mom,
go to
yeah.
make a request, it takes months to get, you know, even response. But if you send it to the wrong place, it takes even longer. I think it took me like 16 months just to get a response that I sent it to the wrong place. So
That's, you know, that's the like the you can only learn that lesson the hard way, I would think, is to make that
won't
mistake
make
and
that one
do it.
again. Right.
Yeah. And then if for the records, it's $25 if it's under 5 pages. Of course, you're hoping that it's more than 5 pages. In that case, flat fee, $70, and you get the whole file. And it could be 80 pages, right? I mean, these things could be huge.
Yes,
Okay.
absolutely.
Let's go. Let me add, hey, Dennis, why don't you unmute? It's good to see you.
Oh, good to see you too. I was going to say I got my dad's records from St. Louis, and they were in the burn group, so it cost me, you know, the $70. But everything is here. His immunization records. I found out that he was a he was wounded at Normandy, which I didn't do. There's so many things I didn't know about it. But everything, even his pay records. Every shot he's ever received from the army, and it was well worth the $70 that I paid for this, because it just it's, you know, I also got mine, but you know, mine was free, but they had to restore these, and they did a really good job of copying, you know, some of the stuff. I guess they can't, but just it was absolutely amazing. And I was
That's
so
so
happy
cool.
that I spent $70 to get it done, because I learned so much more about his service, and where he was. It just made me kind of got me a good connection to him.
How long ago did you do that? Did you get those records?
That was about, let me see, what's the data on this thing? I can't read the data on it. It probably about 5 years ago.
And you know that I'm going to mute you here just for a little feedback. Renee Gefkin here put in the chat, what are some of the reasons a person would want to conduct a search? And I think this is, you know, to learn about a loved one that you. So many of these veterans come home, they never talk about their service. Your grandfather, Beth, I believe, threw away his uniform, never talked about it. You describe it as a black hole in the family history, and very few people knew anything about him or his service. There's that human curiosity to know, you know, about my father, my mother. And then are there other reasons why somebody would want to search? Maybe some kind of benefits, or some kind of, you know, I don't know, a membership in a group or organization or something like that. I'm sure there are other reasons why a next of kin or descendant would want to know. John Kramer, how are you? You could unmute.
How you doing, Todd? Just an interesting story from my standpoint. Years ago, when my mother was in a nursing home, I was looking into veterans benefits for her. Now, the strange thing about it, my father, who was in World War II, was actually in the Merchant Marines. Now, the Merchant Marines weren't considered part of the military for a long time. And so I started with the National Personnel Center. And they actually issued me a DD-214 for him. But for all his records, get this, I was pointed initially to the U.S. Coast Guard National Maritime Center, who I contacted them, and they sent me a folder an inch thick with things about my father, who in turn sent me to the U.S. Department of Transportation, who now maintains even more records on merchant mariners. And they sent me a folder about an inch thick. I have more stuff on my father than I ever knew existed. And once I got all that, I started looking into things like on Twitter and found a World War II Merchant Marines Association who pointed me to more things. And I actually have lists of all the ships he were on, all his shipmates, and everything. And it's just one thing leads to another, which leads to another. And so if anybody is looking for something merchant marine wise, you go through various groups to find it, but it's all there. Thanks, Todd.
Oh, is that great?
Awesome. That's well, so cool.
And Beth, I mean, that is like what you preach is never give up, never give up, never give up. Keep on searching, keep on asking. There are probably more avenues that you could go down than you have time to go down, but keep on going. And one thing will lead to another, and you'll eventually see the daylight and get to some of the information that you're looking for. Brian.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Dennis was just talking about how he was able to get some records that were from the burn file. How long did it take once he requested that? And did they let him know sooner than later that they were retrievable?
Great question. Yeah, that is a great question. Dennis, how long did it take you to get those records?
It took about 3 months, if I remember correctly. So it was actually, you know, a fairly quick turnaround time, but they did let me know that the records were in the part of the burned collection, and it would take them a while to make the copies. And was I willing to spend the money to get them? I said sure. So I think it was, if I remember right, about 3 months from the time I requested till the time I got them.
That's the quickest I've ever heard of. That's amazing.
that's a great turnaround. Let's talk. I just was a historian, because the fire is an important historical event. It's the greatest disaster ever to befall historical records that we know of. I think it's 12 million records or something like that destroyed. It was a fire that burned for 6 days. Never been a cause identified for the fire. It happened in the summer of 1973. Tons of water was poured on from the roof and then from the ground up on the roof. I think it was the sixth floor mainly. This is kind of what a lot of the records look like. And they weren't discarded. They were preserved in the hope that someday there would be a way to retrieve the information on it. I think when the, and as you can see, Beth put here this notation that 80% is it 80% of the records destroyed were Army, or 80% of the Army records were destroyed?
80% of the Army records were destroyed.
80% of Army records between like 1912 and what, 1973 destroyed?
Yeah, anything that was filed there, yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Brutal. 75% of Air Force, because it was part of the, I guess, Army for so long. And but the Navy and Marine Corps, Coast Guard, not damaged for the most part.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
What the... Dennis is showing something here. Here, hold on a second.
That's... Oh, sorry.
Yeah, here. Oh, you were going to... Dennis is showing, I think, the copy of the burn of a burn file, and then you have a copy here of the burn file that you access. So this is clearly
that's the DD-214 that I waited 16 months for. The picture on the right there, that's what I got. that's my uncle's DD-214. That's what was left of it. I was able to. I mean, it was very, very beneficial to me because it shows all the different times that, you know, he was overseas. He was in a photo recon unit. And that helped me match up with records that I got from the Air Force Historical Research Agency. That helped me match up where he was at missions specific. But that's all I got because of the fire from him. I got many more pages, but as far as DD-214 goes, that was it.
And you mentioned in your PDF, which again, we will share, I'll put into the chat when I have a chance here. You mentioned a wonderful kind of information center, information session that the National Archives did about the reconstruction efforts that are being made to recover these burned records. It really is quite remarkable. I mean, millions of records were taken out of the building and put on the front lawn. This is July 1973 in milk crates. And then the concern was, geez, it's so hot and humid in St. Louis in July, mold is going to take over these things. And I think they ended up using McDonnell Douglas vacuum chamber that they were using for space flights or something like that, experiments to squeeze the water out of them. And they got hundreds of gallons of water from these pieces of paper. And they just kept on doing it, kept on, one round after another, one round after another, and were able to that way save some of these. So it really is a remarkable story of recovery. So you were going to say here, this is the OMPF can have invaluable information, even a burned one.
Right. Like I said, and like Dennis said too, the amount of information that was in, my family members' burn files, it was monumental. We knew of my grandpa, like I've told you before, as being a tail gunner, but I learned, and nobody in the family knew, that he initially enlisted into the cadet pilot training program, and nobody knew that. And he got washed out because he was an inch and a half too short. But it was very interesting to learn, and there were records that show like the planes that he flew when he was in the school, and the grades that he got. And but nobody in my family ever knew that.
Isn't that great? And you could feel like you get to know your grandfather for the first time, in a sense. If it can't be recovered, if it's burned beyond recognition, there are still other records that you could access that will have a lot of information.
Correct. Like my uncle Raymond, who was killed in action, there is no OMPF. There's the IDPF, the Individual Deceased Personnel File, but other records that I went to the St. Louis, or not, I'm sorry, I went to the College Park, Maryland National Archives to look in the unit histories. There's so many other places that you can look. Hope is not lost.
These records, these aren't the kind of records, morning reports, unit rosters. These aren't the kind of records that you could just kind of order from the archives.gov website, correct? I mean, you have to go on site to the record centers and spend some
Correct.
time requesting them, correct?
Correct. An IDPF you can request online. And like many other things, they are in the process of being all sent to the St. Louis National Archives. The last time I looked, I think St. Louis had letters A through L, but the Army still had everything else. So I don't know exactly if that's still where they're at with the IDPFs, but they can be ordered. But the rest of that stuff there is all stuff that you would do on site or hiring an independent researcher.
And that's it. I was just going to say, okay, so let's say you don't want to drive to St. Louis and be in that hot, muggy weather in the summer. You could send Beth there, for example. I mean, that's exactly what independent researchers do. They make the research trips, they go to their connections at the National Personnel Research Center or Record Center and elsewhere, and they do the research for you. And you could hire Beth to do that by going to her website, ruschelresearch.com. That's Ruschel records. No, shit. Ruschelresearch.com. I'll put it in the chat here. You could see her rates and hire her. Well worth it, boy, if you're looking for it. George Kness, how are you?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, how are you, George?
Good, good. Getting along good. Oh, you raised an issue about the St. Louis fire. Let me give you my story about that because it's very personal and very upsetting for me. Okay, so I'm in Carnegie Mellon about to graduate, and the VA comes out and says that we have further information about other things that have affected Vietnam veterans being exposed to Agent Orange and other chemicals, spraying chemicals in Vietnam, of which I was there. I used to travel on the planes and take pictures with the ranch hand crews. And I was exposed and I had leaching in my scalp and everything during the war. And then afterwards, it came back again while I'm in college. So I go to the VA in downtown Pittsburgh and I report this to them. And they said, well, can you show me your records? And I said, you guys have my records. And they said, oh yeah, it's in a repository and everything. But can you prove that you were exposed? And I said, well, I went to numerous medical calls at the dispensary at Tonsonu Airport to be treated for it. And it's in my medical records. So they looked it up and they immediately came back and said, we have no record of your records. They were lost in the fire in St. Louis. And I said, well, what the hell? And I said, but can you treat me now? Because it's come back. And they said, no, we cannot treat you unless you can prove that you were treated in Vietnam. So I was incensed. Okay. I was totally incensed. And that's when I just caught that attitude against the VA. This is like 1975 or so.
Yeah.
And I was so, so upset. I had a wife. I had a child. I was going to college. And here's the VA that exposed me to this stuff. And they discovered that I had it. And they put it on the list. And they would not treat me because they negligently or whatever lost the records in a fire.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is good news for me that they've recovered some of the records. But I just wanted to tell you my story.
Yeah.
And
that's upsetting.
Yeah.
Thank you, George.
Just very upsetting. I went to the private medical people of all types. It was treated. It went away. My daughter was concerned that when she grew up after she was born, that she might get it genetically from me.
Right.
So that was a concern for a while. That's been cleared up. But I just wanted to impart that story and say that St. Louis fire had big implications for a lot of Vietnam veterans in the area.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry to mute you there, George. That was, thank you for sharing that. Let me ask Bill Confer. How are you, Bill? How are things in Lititz, PA?
Okay. Just great, Todd. Thanks for calling me. I just wanted to let George know that there is a Agent Orange newsletter out there that the VA sends out to. I was told that it's almost everybody that was in Vietnam. So it depends. I guess some of the VAs are a little more friendly than others, but he needs to get a copy of that and stay on top of it because they're relating everything to Agent Orange now, all kinds of cancers and different things and heart attacks. I mean, it's crazy, but there's a lot of things that can be related. If you can't get it from your VA, just talk to the veteran service officer or go to the local Legion. I got started through the Legion and they really helped me. And I just wanted to say that when I got out of the service, they gave me a microfiche file. So that's how my whole personnel file came out was on microfiche. And of course, you got to go somewhere where you can read that. But I could probably apply for a paper copy, you know. I haven't done that. But I mean, when I left, they actually gave me the microfiche.
They gave you the actual microfiche.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. I stayed pretty up on records while I was in the service because they lost some of my records, especially the shot record. You mentioned the shot record there. I got my 17 shots twice when I first joined the military because they accidentally put my shot record in my finance file instead of my medical file. So when I got to where I needed to show all those shots, nobody checked my finance file. They checked the medical file and it wasn't there. So I couldn't go to Vietnam without them. So I got 17 more shots before I left for Vietnam. And then last but not least, the Merchant Marines. Bill Blabenow has been going a lot down to New Orleans. And there's a museum down there. And he's putting a lot of Merchant Marine information down there. And I know that they're very thankful for having him come down there to see him.
Yeah, he's probably donating his records and artifacts and things like that. That's terrific.
Yeah.
I put in the chat here, I put a link to the Agent Orange newsletter that the VA publishes, and it looks like they publish it once a year, maybe more frequently than that, but I put a link to it, to the latest one that I could find. Brian, if you want to unmute.
There we go. Sorry.
There we go.
I hate to monopolize things, but since we didn't get into the drawing, we were curious, what roughly are the costs for Beth's services to do the research?
That's a good question. They're at her website, racialresearch.com, which I have put in the chat. But let me ask Beth. Let me look at your services here, and so we can get some pricing, because that is a good. And I'm going to share my screen. Okay, here we go. I've got to let somebody in first. Pat Hughes from Texas, got to let him in. All right. This is Beth's website. Let's go to services. And...
Or you can go to the research packages tab too, because that's...
Okay. Okay, let's look at this first. This is consultation, 30 minutes on Zoom or over the phone, free consultation. That's nice of you, Beth. And that, I think I would imagine, Beth, that in that consultation, you would be telling people kind of if you just want to do it yourself, you know, here's what you do, or this is probably what you're going to be wanting, you know, this is probably where you should go, what you should do. And then it looks like I'm not putting words in your mouth, but a 2-hour coaching and consultation session for $75 would be a much more intense kind of step-by-step research plan that you would create with somebody over a 2-hour session.
Right.
Okay.
And that's, people that know me know that I would probably almost definitely spend more than time. I don't know how to start helping.
You're a nut. That's for sure. And I have to say that, you know, this is really a labor of love for Beth. I mean, for not only does she she's models herself after Nancy Drew, but also she's just so embedded in the veterans community and so much a part of it. She knows that this is such valuable information to so many people. And then for an in-depth research record report, this is where, you know, you go out and you do the research and you come back with everything that you could find. $175, and you cover all the processing. Is that any more to say about the in-depth research record report?
No, and that's the fee that you'll find on the tab for the next upcoming trip to St. Louis. That's the fee for that. And I think you and I discussed, Todd, I would do a consultation with somebody before I would go there. With that information, I would get their veterans information, and then I reach out to the National Archives. I want to make sure that it's something that can be done before I go and charge anybody money for something.
Yeah, you don't want to come back empty-handed. And if you know that you are going to come back empty-handed, you're not going to take the job.
Correct.
So I'm going to put the link to this page that kind of details all you would do for the $175 right here in the chat. Brian, I think that should answer your question. Let me look in the chat now. I haven't had a chance to go through the chat, but I do want to invite people if they have a question or a comment a story to share, please do feel free to raise your hand. Here we go, Al.
Oh. Yeah. Beth, I'm curious if you ever use this resource. I did, and it helped me. Make a long story short, in Vietnam, one of the guys in my platoon was killed. I knew his hometown in Ohio. That's all I knew. When I got home, I thought it would be maybe comforting to reach out to the parents who I have always told want to know about their son or daughter when they were killed or their service. So I didn't know how to get to him. I went to the Vietnam Wall. And at the Vietnam Wall, they have huge books and they have information about each name on the wall. And where it helped me was the hometown newspaper. Because once I found out from the date he was killed to the hometown newspaper, in the obituary was a ton of information, and I was able to track down the mother and father and the phone number, and I actually ended up calling them, and they said, please come out and see us. And so, again, for somebody who was in Vietnam, if they lost their life, the obituaries can be a wealth of information. I don't know if Beth has ever used that.
And Al, actually, when I was looking up your friend Michael, the first thing I did was, now you can access all of the information from the wall on their website. There's also an app, actually. But so the first place I looked to make sure that Michael came home was their website. Actually, I have the app on my phone. I looked on there. And I always use newspapers.com because I you can find so much information on there. Not all the time, but obituaries are almost always on there.
Peg Dybul, how are you? Good to see you. 2 weeks in a row.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. Somehow or other, I have ended up doing quite a few of these for folks who walk in the library at MAPS because I'm a researcher there. All this information, I've gotten lots of great ideas from Beth. I just keep writing notes. But I thought I would add a few places that resources that I go to. When I'm looking, and the gentleman who was just talking about the obituary, I end up using quite a few websites, which I'm sure Beth does also. Find a Grave is, it's a free one. All you have to do is just sign up for it. Fold3.com is actually a compilation of military records. And sometimes you get lucky and sometimes you don't, but there is a charge to that. Ancestry.com, newspapers.com. What I have found in newspapers.com and that makes it so valuable is that many times if a soldier or sailor came home on leave, it would get reported in the newspaper. Or if he was in a particular battle, it would get reported in the newspaper. If, somebody jumped in Normandy with the 82nd, it gets reported in the newspaper. So that's a really good resource that I have used a lot. And then also in Ohio, and I don't know about other states, I've only had to chase down a father, a grandfather, and a father in Pennsylvania. And I got kind of lucky with doing that. But most of the people that I do are from Ohio, obviously. But in Ohio, we have just in our library, but also in most genealogy libraries, the Ohio Genealogical Society has a huge library. But almost every place will have the Ohio soldiers and sailors roster from World War I, if you're looking at that. And it is incredibly invaluable because it gives everything about every single service person for World War I, from their birth date to where they enlisted, what they served, what their rank was, where they served, if they served overseas, it will tell, which department they served in. So it's very, very valuable there. Often then when I'm able to finally get some type of unit information, then I will go to a number of different places. And one of the places that we have in our maps research and reference room is sort of where I spend my life, but it's a collection of unit histories, ship histories, airbase histories that people have donated to us when they donate other books and other artifacts. And so, if you happen to be lucky enough to have a regimental history, or even a division history, it's a little tougher to whittle it down to where somebody was at a particular time. But the smaller the size unit on those histories, the better off you are in being able to actually track where that individual service member may have been serving. And then from there, honestly, I just start Googling, and I'm sure Beth does this as well. You know, if I know that somebody served in a particular unit, I just put it in the Google bar and see what comes up, because it is absolutely amazing what is out there from, different organizations, different reunions. There are some dot mil websites that are extremely good. So anyway, that those were just, some of the additional ones that I tend to use quite a bit.
That's what, Todd, I don't know if we'll have time, but if able, I wanted to use the one question that I put in the slideshow. I think it was Helen, as an example of what you can find via Google.
Yes, and let me get to that. I do want to thank our sponsors before you get to that, because that is a perfect example of how to use Google. I'm a little embarrassed to say that's where I go first. Put the name in quotations, and then you sometimes a bomb group association will have the full missing air crew report right there on the site, and that's all you need. So yeah, that's a for me, it's a good first step. Irene, how are you, Irene? Good to see you all the way from Houston.
Thank you very much. Okay. I have just a quick question. My father for Rachel, my father was wounded in France. He was there only 8 days. He said that I believe a captain picked him up and took him to an aid station, and then he was flown to England. And I always thought it would be nice to contact that person's family to thank them, or him if he's still alive. And I was wondering if his records were, he was in the army, and his records were, we applied for them, and his records were, we were told, were burned and lost in the fire. But if they were to be reconstructed, or if they had not been burned, would that information have been on his record?
I've seen hospital admission cards from World War II. I've never seen anything about how the person ended up in the hospital.
Okay.
I would think that just in the midst of a war, that I don't know, how that would, the morning reports detail who was dropped from the rolls, which is like, everybody that's there. Anybody that goes to the hospital or is missing is mentioned on the morning report, but they don't notate, anything. I personally have never seen that, but maybe somebody else has. I have not seen that before.
And I have to
Sorry.
say, Irene's father, Peter Huizen, attended our events with your mother, Vicky.
Yes.
Two wonderful, wonderful, beautiful people that we miss a lot. They were some of our earliest veterans at the Veterans Breakfast Club.
Irene, we could probably find his hospital. Sorry, my brain, Todd. His hospital admission card and his unit,
Here
and
we
then
go.
perhaps look at what who the commanding officers were. I mean, there are ways. There are ways if you think outside the box, now that I think about it. So feel free
Okay.
to
Great.
This is
Thank
why
you.
Beth
We have
is so
time.
great. This is why she's so great. She doesn't,
Exactly.
you know what? There might be a way. Yeah,
Thank
real
you very
Nancy,
much.
modern
You're
day
welcome.
Nancy Drew. Can I ask you a stupid question that betrays my ignorance, Beth?
Sure.
What is a morning report?
A morning report? That is at the company. So, for instance, Raymond, I found his morning report from when he went missing, but when he was actually killed in action. The morning report was his company's report of their location, date, time. His actually just said the vicinity of Gussenberg, I think it was. But and it lists anybody that is missing, any notable changes. Anybody that was removed from the roles due to hospitalization, missing in action, any big changes in the company at the company level.
Okay, and who writes the morning report, and do they write it in the morning?
That part would be a veteran question. I don't know. I honestly can't tell you, but I bet one of these people, fine people here, would know the answer to that.
I'm suspecting they do. Bill, are you the one who knows the answer?
That's you're exactly right. It's done in the morning, compiles all the soldiers in that unit, and it's usually done by the first sergeant or his chief clerk.
Thank
And
you.
it's done every day.
Every day. Oh, and it's quite the pain.
I could imagine quite the pain.
It is. It's crazy.
It is crazy. Beth, what about Ancestry.com? What do you know, is that a place that
So,
somebody should like go to immediately, sign up and start researching?
one thing that's awesome that's on Ancestry.com right now for Pennsylvania, if you're researching a Pennsylvania World War II veteran, again, like I said, every state seems to have different FOIA regulations, what they've released. But Pennsylvania has released these things that I've sent to a few of you that sent me questions. The veterans compensation application. So the veterans compensation application that they filed sometimes 5 years after they came back, there could be, I've seen unit information on there, but the most helpful thing, other than where they lived, they show where they lived when they went into service. They also put if they, whenever they were gone overseas, it tells you the date that they left the US and the date that they came back, which can be really helpful on all kinds of levels, for knowing when, okay, so Uncle Bob served in the 94th Infantry Division. Well, now we know when he went. Because everybody went in at different times. So there's a lot of information on there that can be really helpful. That's a huge, and of course, Ancestry.com, I don't know if you guys know, owns Fold3. So of course, so that people like me have to have 9 million memberships, you can get some military stuff on Ancestry.com, like Navy muster rolls, and then you can get other things on Fold3, like there are some unit records. So you have to kind of use both of them together.
This is so great. We have a bunch of questions about a kind of tranche of questions here. Jim Roberts asks, what about Spanish American War veterans? Karen asks about, and I think you answered it here in the chat, American Revolutionary and Civil War records. Where are those? Can you do those? That kind of research. Beth Feather asks, how far back do you go looking for records? So what if I said, like, I had an ancestor, I think, fought in the Civil War? Would you be willing and able to kind of take that on?
So the Civil War files, I don't know that we can actually physically access them. So I have the pension file from a Civil War ancestor, my mom's great grandfather, and that came to me and it's more expensive than an OMPF. I think it was like $120 or something. But I had to order that from the National Archives One. That's the one in DC, right by the National Mall, the one that you see on TV. It's real pretty. So anything Civil War and before is located in that building. And I am not sure because I have not gone there physically. I don't know that they let you actually physically touch some of those records. Some of them are so fragile that only the archivists are able to, touch those records.
And I imagine there has to be a digitization project that's many years in the making,
There are a
right?
lot of pension files for Civil War on NARA's website. On the National Archives website, they are starting to digitize Civil War pension files. So there are quite a few on there. Not everybody, obviously, but they are starting to digitize those.
Okay, now we're trying to, this game is called Stump Beth. What about Spanish American War records?
You sound like my Uncle Jack, who's a Vietnam veteran. He really wanted to know if anybody in our family served in that war. Unfortunately, he didn't have ancestors here at that time. But Spanish American War is also you can find some stuff on the National Archives website. I believe that's also probably held at National Archives One. There are pension file index cards for the Spanish American War on NARA's website, on ancestry.com. You can find the pension index card, and that will give you the information to actually find their pension file.
Darn it, Beth. We wanted to stump you. Ed Cottrell, how are you, Ed?
Fine, Todd. I have a question for Beth. Is it possible to retrieve all the missions that I flew? My logbook was destroyed, and I have no record of the missions that I flew during World War II. Is it possible through you to get those records?
Sir, it would be an honor. The next time I go to St. Louis, it would be an absolute honor to pull your did they have the independent flight records? Did they keep those for you? Do you know? I mean, I know they have them for bomber crews. I would think they had them for fighter pilots as well, but they
I'm
have
sure
those in
they
St.
do.
Louis.
I had my logbook, but it was destroyed, so I have no record of only just what I remember.
I would be very happy to get those for you when I go to St. Louis next time.
I will email you with my
Service
email,
number.
my name, and the fighter group that I was with, and so forth. I'll send
Thank you
the
so much.
information. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed.
So do you think those records exist with the fighter group?
So I'm sure they do. Okay.
I know even the bomber groups, they have those in St. Louis. I was always told that they only created them for the pilots, for any of the officers. But I do have flight records from my grandpa, and he was not an officer; he was a sergeant. And my Uncle Gene was a master sergeant, and I have them for him. So I bet that they would have them for Ed.
This is so cool.
That would be
Thank you so
great.
much. Thank you, Ed, for giving Beth that opportunity to do that research. Kevin Callahan, how are you?
Good. I just wanted to mention to Ed that I knew a Czechoslovakian researcher who flew to Washington, D.C., and he was actually even able to get the mission debriefings, when they did interrogation and they wrote it all up for
Yeah.
each mission, which gives you all the people that were on the airplane, et cetera, et cetera. So Washington, D.C., I think requires more that you show up in person to get that level of information, but it would exist. I also wanted to comment that my dad, it kind of explained this thing about why do you go to the real estate people? And he was in World War II, and he said when he was discharged, they told him, well, you're going to have this new thing, the GI Bill, and so you have to prove that you were honorably discharged. So go to the county recorder where you live. Now, he got his VA benefits for land and for education in another state, but I would have to know where he sort of landed in terms of when he got out of the service. But that's available. Also, I've been finding it's very useful to put up just a web page about people that you served with, crew members, because there's other people out there looking and searching. If they can find a web page about that, you'll connect with the whole families of the crews and so forth. And I won't bore you with some of my stories, but some of them were amazing, where I put up some information and then people were researching and they explained what happened during World War II to a family who had been wondering about it ever since it happened. And that was because they could contact the other crew member. Anyway, that's all I had.
That is wonderful information. And Kevin, and how about that? That totally makes sense about the real estate, the separation records and the and being in the real estate office for the GI Bill. That makes sense. I think you solved a little mystery. Helen, how are you?
I'm great, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Hi,
Thank you.
Helen.
Thank you so much for your commitment to our veterans and all the work that you do. You are an inspiration to me.
Oh, you're welcome, Helen.
Yeah,
and
Beth, you gave me more information in a minute than I was able to gain in weeks and months and years. So I thank you for your efforts in looking up my father's records.
You're welcome. And I have a whole bunch of stuff after this program. I'm going to send you a link to the Google file of all the stuff I found.
Oh, that's amazing. You know, my father was one of those people who he came back from the war and he just never spoke about it again. And, you know, little bits and pieces that I knew, but he never kept any of that information. Like, he didn't keep his records. They just never talked about it again. And the only thing I really have of my father is that he was in the Tiger Tank Battalion 817th Company A, and that he remained after the war to guard the German prisoners of war. But that really, I don't know much anything else, but you sent me links to really what was just astounding, that what his battalion really accomplished in the war. And it just gave me a whole new picture of my dad. And I was so grateful for that. I really was.
You're welcome, Samara.
That's so beautiful, Helen.
Yeah. And, you know, and it just makes me want, like, to look more, to see, you know, really what else was he involved in? Because, you know, in so many ways, it just might explain a lot of who he was. And my dad was just, every time a flag went by, my dad stood up, put his hand on his heart. He was so 100% American. And I just really got so much from him in terms of, like, this is the greatest country in the world and we need to do everything we can to protect it. And so I learned that from him from a very early age. And it just makes me want to learn more about what his battalion did and what he accomplished in the war. Because I know he was injured. He was severely injured, but he remained with his battalion. And after he was released from the hospital, continued with his battalion. So I would love to see his records. And so that just kind of instills me to, like, research more.
Yeah, he has a really cool history.
Yeah. I'm looking at the clock here. It's 8:30. Our program is over, but I'm going to get Steve Giordano to ask one last question here. Steve, you're joining us from Kane, PA.
Kane, Pennsylvania.
The proud home of the Haberberger family. My brother-in-law is Drew Haberberger. I'm looking at his house right now. He's right next door to me.
Great people.
Great people. And a great brewery also. Log Yard Brewery.
That's in my old pharmacy building. I don't know how they're involved in that, but his relative runs a very good trash collection business and is very loyal to veterans. Very, very, very fair, good, well-run, independent business.
Very good. You put an interesting question here in the chat. How do you find ship log records? Beth, do you know offhand?
I think somebody actually answered that for him that said that there's a lot of stuff in the National Archives, but I found a lot of Navy stuff on Ancestry and Fold 3. They have all the what do they call them? Muster rolls. So if your person was in the Navy, you'll see them, you know, on every one of those. And then at the end of it, it shows you if there are changes. It shows you if there are changes. It shows you if they went AWOL. It shows you all kinds of different things at the end. But
muster rolls, ship muster rolls are different from ship logs, correct?
One second, I'm trying to see if I have a picture of the logs.
I'm going to follow up, Beth, and thank you again, Todd, also for everything you do. I'm a walking advertisement for you. I tell so many people how active. I just talked to my county representative today, and I'm going to follow up with him. I just tell everybody, and I've never seen an organization that's as active and different programs like you have. And thank you, Beth, too. I will contact you on your website, too, and not looking for, nothing. But
and I can send you a link, because the National Archives does have ship logs, submarine deck logs. It has all kinds of stuff for the Navy. So I can point you in the right direction. Just email me.
I will. I'll go to your website. Thank you again, Todd.
Thank you, Steve.
Great to see all fellow veterans and people interested.
Oh, great. What a wonderful evening. This went so fast. Jim McStay, you won the raffle. I hope you know that. You were one of the one of the three winners. And I'll be contacting you and putting you in touch with Beth. This is such a wonderful evening. Beth, thank you so much for joining us. I have a feeling I'm going to be asking you to come on again for a follow-up. Maybe this should be something that we do fairly regularly, because there are going to be more people with more questions. And we'd love to hear kind of updates on what new information you found for people. So thank you so much, Beth.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And those of you that I emailed with and I have information for, I'll follow up and send you links to it all.
Take care, everybody. Happy April Fool's Day. Don't be fooled. All right. Take care.
Thank you for watching this episode of The Scuttlebutt. I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Tobacco Free Adagio Health. Tobacco Free Adagio Health has been supporting the podcast for quite some time now. We've been so pleased to be supported by them. They are dedicated to reducing and preventing tobacco use and getting the word out about the hazards of smoking and secondhand smoke. They're all about health, so they want people to quit. They have classes, nicotine replacement therapy, and a popular quit line, 1-800-QUIT-NOW. They also educate people, children especially, about tobacco use from cigarettes, cigars, pipes, chew, snuff, and other nicotine products like vaping. And finally, Tobacco Free Adagio Health advocates for public and private policies that ensure healthy places to live, work, and play. You can learn all about what Tobacco Free Adagio Health offers at tobaccofree.adagiohealth.org, or you can check out the two Scuttlebutt episodes that featured Tobacco Free Adagio Health. We had a wonderful representative come on to the podcast, talk to us about all the classes and therapies that they offer. It was two wonderful conversations, so I definitely direct you to both of those if you want more information, or just call their free quit line, 1-800-QUIT-NOW. Thank you again, Tobacco Free Adagio Health, for your support. We're grateful for the support of UPMC for Life, a UPMC healthcare Medicare program. At UPMC Health Plan, their goal is to improve the health of their members. They can also help you make sense of Medicare, get the answers and information you need, such as how to choose the Medicare Advantage plan that's right for you. UPMC for Life offers a wide range of affordable Medicare Advantage plans, and you military veterans can save money and get more benefits with your Medicare plans. UPMC for Life has plans designed for veterans by veterans. The type of coverage you have from your service may help you decide which plan will be a good fit. If you have TRICARE for Life, UPMC for Life PPO Salute may be a good fit for you. You can view plan options, including their prescription drug coverage, compare costs, and learn about all the benefits you get when you choose UPMC for Life by going to upmchealthplan.com/Medicare. Thank you so much, UPMC for Life, for sponsoring the Scuttlebutt.